Ed Adams, and this is the Weekly Genealogy Toolkit, the podcast that helps the new genealogist get the most out of their research time and avoid the most common pitfalls. I remember about a decade ago when I was in my master's program and I was taking a course entitled The Balkan Quagmire that was all about the creation of and ultimately fragmentation of Yugoslavia. It was a fascinating course taught by a really good team of professors, but what made the course that much more interesting was that I was one of only two Americans in the course. Every other student in the course was from the Balkans. These folks weren't there to learn about the disintegration of Yugoslavia. They had all lived through the disintegration. They were really there to make sure that the two Americans in the course heard their version of the story, along with the professor's version. I got that and was sensitive to the fact that for them, this course was something different than it was for me. What I thought was fascinating, though, was even at the beginning of the course, when we were talking about medieval history of the region, there would be knock-down, drag-out fights over various interpretations of events. I'm talking grown adults, purple in the face, spit flying out of their mouths, while they're arguing about things that happened in the 13th century. It occurred to me that if you live in a relatively young country that has border disputes with your neighbors, and there's been a history of those borders being moved by force, history is no longer an idle pastime, and it becomes much more a part of your now. It matters to you in a way that for many Americans, regardless of how much you may enjoy history, it doesn't really matter quite like that. It was really a valuable experience in cultural awareness. It's not really all that related to genealogy, but that story really helps me put a concrete feeling to the importance of understanding the historical context of your ancestors. Because it's all history to us, sitting at our desks, clicking through image after image of old documents. But to your ancestors that you're researching, that history was there now. It was the context of their lives, the things that they worried and stressed about. I feel like I often have to remind myself of that as I'm looking into ancestors of mine who fought in wars. I got my degree in military history, and I've always been fascinated by conflicts as I think that they shape so much of human history. But as I look at the present circumstances of the world, those wars seem less fascinating and more terrifying. I have no doubt that most of my veteran ancestors weren't so much fascinated by their respective conflicts as they were just trying to navigate them for themselves and for their families. The study of genealogy for many becomes a sort of microscopic look at the history of human migration. Almost universally, the people who are in a place today weren't in that place at some point in the past. For some, that point was recent enough that it falls within a genealogical time frame, and it's always interesting to try to find out where you're from. Finding out only that your family came from a certain place feels a bit hollow without understanding some of the why behind that migration. It's really impossible to figure out the motivations of individuals who lived hundreds of years ago, or even really a few generations ago, unless you're really lucky and the individual kept a diary. But what we can do is look at our ancestors as a part of a bigger picture and seek to understand that bigger picture. But what am I even talking about here? I guess what I'm saying is, don't find yourself stuck just researching your relatives. There's so much more to know than names and dates of birth, marriage, and death. I've had several moments when genealogy has taken my breath away, but it's rarely been when I found out when my ancestor got married. It's when I read about their world, the environment that shaped them and made them who they were. So what I'm suggesting is that once you've found that next generation back, you found the names and the places and the dates, take a small pause and start to explore their world. Thankfully, due to the power of the internet, you don't even have to get out of your chair. You just have to open a new tab on your browser and start Googling for the most part. So let's talk about how I get to know the world of my ancestors. First, I suppose, is my broad understanding of history. I think if you're going to be successful at all in family history research, you've got to at least have a mastery of, say, high school level history. What were the big moving pieces? When did they occur? There's often practical benefits to this knowledge, as it can help you understand what sorts of sources might be available depending on when and where your ancestor lived. Beyond that, it will help you better target much more interesting microhistory of your ancestor. When I talk about microhistory, I'm talking about the moments in history that directly shaped your ancestor. Say, for example, your great-grandparents lived in the small North Texas town of New London from the 1920s to the 1940s, before moving on to Florida. Sure, the Great Depression would have been a major influence on their lives. If you don't have a good understanding of the Depression and how it occurred and what its impacts on your great-grandparents were likely to have been, you might want to start there. There may not be many sources that talk about the effect of the Great Depression on New London, Texas, or even on North Texas. But there's enough out there, and the information will be broadly applicable enough to be worth digesting. But that's not really microhistory. Microhistory is discovering that on March 8, 1937, in New London, a major natural gas explosion leveled the town school, killing more than 300 teachers, administrators, and mostly children. That's the kind of event that very few people in the world know about, but was possibly the single largest shaping event of your ancestor's life. Now let's say that your great-grandmother was a schoolteacher in New London when that explosion occurred. You may never find out how she survived. Was she one of the lucky few who was spared? Was she late to work that day? Was she out sick? There may be no way of knowing, but now that you've learned about the event and your ancestor's occupation, you have an entirely different level of appreciation for your great-grandmother. Your relationship with your own history shifts, and you start to see your own life from a different perspective. It may sound hokey, but that's been my experience. But how do you learn that the 1937 explosion in New London even happened? Well, in this case specifically, there's a good book by Ron Rizal published in 2012 titled My Boys and Girls Are in There, but more broadly speaking, I'll just start looking at histories of my ancestors' world from the smallest area out. So if I learn that my ancestor was from Bloomington, Illinois, then I first start looking at the history of Bloomington, then of McLean County, Illinois, then of Illinois, then of the Midwest, and so on. It's sometimes as easy as Googling. If I were doing this, I'd literally start by Googling Bloomington, Illinois history. I'd learn about the 1900 fire that burned down most of downtown, about the 1917 streetcar strike. You'll find good information on Wikipedia, on local genealogical society websites. Sometimes local libraries have historical overviews of the local community. Speaking of libraries, I'd like to take a moment to praise librarians, because they're just the best sort of people. When I'm trying to get research done on the history of some very obscure topic, I have found great success in just calling the library local to whatever area I'm researching. They almost never know the answer to my questions, but they almost always direct me to people who either know the answers or can find the answers. They're always super friendly. Just recently, I was looking into the history of a particular Confederate hospital in Alabama. I called up the local librarian, and without even batting an eye at my strange request, she said, "Oh, let me get you the phone number for Mr. So-and-so, the local historical society president." I had a great conversation with the man she referred me to, and he even mailed me some things that have been helpful in building my understanding. But beyond Google and calling up librarians, there are plenty of resources for learning about the small bits of history often forgotten by some of the easier-to-get sources. I'm a big fan of the Arcadia publishing series called Images of America. I'm almost certain you've seen these books, as they're usually found pretty prominently in Barnes & Noble stores anywhere I've ever been. They're usually tannish in color. Their cover is dominated by an old photograph. You've seen them. They're well-researched and written. They're very well-researched and written. They're full of photographs that will really give you a feeling for the topic or location that you're researching. Also, if you can get your hands on it, check out A Bibliography of American County Histories by P. William Philby. It can be pricey, especially for a book that's just going to point you to other books, but I don't know of a more exhaustive listing of published histories of American counties. Going back to Google, don't fall into the trap of just using the all category in Google. You can find good stuff here, but you'll likely have more success if you also search using the books category. As an example, I just searched for McLean County, Illinois history in Google. I get some good results back for Wikipedia and several genealogy or museum sites, but if I instead search books for the same search item, I find 5 different works published in different eras that I can track down. Some of the books are in the public domain and can be downloaded directly from Google Books, but for others, I go to worldcat.org. It's kind of a global library card catalog, and search for the books there to see where the nearest library has them. If you can't get a copy locally, which isn't unusual, don't forget about interlibrary loan. You can often talk to your local librarian, who can coordinate with the library that has the book, to get it on loan for you for a couple of weeks. I have more than once been surprised by the things that I have read in local histories. Not only will you get a rich understanding of the microhistory of your ancestor's life, but sometimes you'll even learn things about your ancestor. I once learned that one of my wife's ancestors was an architect who designed the county courthouse. Pretty interesting, especially since my wife is a pretty amazing architect herself. So that local history helped solve the question of where that particular talent of my wife's came from. But even if you don't find a great bit of information that is specifically about your ancestor, I guarantee you that building on your knowledge of the world that your ancestor occupied will help you in your research and give you a greater sense of connection with that name and set of dates on your family info sheet. So I'd encourage you to spend some time trying to understand the now of your ancestors' lives. And remember, what is distant and dry history to us was life and death, success and failure, love and hate for them. It helps turn those names into flesh and blood characters that you can identify with and help further build your understanding of who you are. I feel so strongly about this tip that it's given me the idea to produce an occasional super episode, if you will, a storytelling of a particular bit of microhistory from somewhere that I think is interesting. So, fair warning, next episode is going to be different, and it's going to be much longer than our usual 10 to 15 minutes. I probably won't do it often, maybe once a quarter or so, but I think it'll be an interesting way to spice things up and keep you inspired to dig into your own family history. If you'd like to reach out, feel free to contact me on Twitter at TheWGTPod. And leave a review if you're really enjoying what you're hearing. As always, though, thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.